plate a potential nugget.
The related question that came up as I was reading the book, Dan, was in your research, while you've captured a lot of the what people are saying when it comes to regrets, what have we learned about how people, are there any practices that you've discovered which helps people listen to the regrets? Is it journaling? Oh. Is it meditation? Is it something else?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a systematic way to deal with these regrets, to deal with our retrospective regrets that we haven't been taught. So I look at it as inward, outward, forward. Inward, outward, forward. So inward is like, how do you reframe how you look at the regret in yourself. That's the first step. And that what you see is that when we make mistakes, particularly, you know, accomplished people like who listen to your podcast, when we make mistakes, the way we talk to ourselves is absurdly cruel and vicious. I mean, you would never talk that way to anybody else. And so what you want to do initially is treat yourself with what's called self-compassion, which is the work of Kristen Neff at the University of Texas in the US. And it basically means treat yourself with kindness rather than contempt. Recognize that your regrets are part of the human condition and that any single mistake is just a moment in your life, not the full definition of your life. But what happens is that if you were to, I mean, it's incredible. If you were to sort of put an put some kind of amplifying device in people's heads and broadcast the way they talk to themselves to the external world, I think people would be horrified. You'd be horrified to hear myself talk. I mean, I think if I talked to other people the way I talk to myself in an organization, I'd be fired. You know, so my point is, don't do that. Treat yourself with kindness rather than contempt. Second thing, this is really important, is the outward, is that there is something important in disclosure. When we disclose things, it's an unburdening. When we disclose things, is actually a way to build affinity. That a lot of us fear that when we disclose our vulnerabilities, people will think less of us. The preponderance of evidence shows people actually think more of us when we do that. But the most important thing is this, that emotions by their very nature are abstract. They're amorphous. That's what makes positive emotions feel so good and negative emotions feel so bad. So with negative emotions, what you want to do is you want to convert them. That when you write about them or talk about them, you convert this blobby abstraction into words which are concrete and less fearsome, and that begins the sense making process. And finally, so we're outward, inward, outward, forward. You need to draw a lesson from it, and this is about our problem solving skills. And while human beings are pretty good problem solvers, we're pretty terrible at solving our own problems. So what you want to do is something called self distancing, where you zoom out and look at the problem in a way that is if it were somebody else's. So you talk to yourself in the third person. You imagine having a conversation with the you of 10 years from now. You do things like ask yourself, what would I tell my best friend to do? There's a great business example of this from Andy Grove, the former CEO of Intel, who always, as a decision-making tool, would say, all right, I'm just trying to decide what to do. What would my successor do? And so when we ask ourselves at a personal level, I'm trying to make a decision, what would I tell my best friend to do? Hmm. We almost always know. Andy Grove said, what would my successor do? He almost always knew. And that's because in order to solve problems for ourselves, we need to be zooming out rather than be so enmeshed in the details.
Actually, in McKinsey, one of the founding fathers of McKinsey was Marvin Bauer, and one of the questions that we would be told is, what would Marvin do in this situation?
As a
frame of decision making.
I didn't know that. That's fascinating. Yeah, that's fascinating. But that's another way to do that. And there's so much good evidence of that. And so when we do these things, you can interrupt. You know, again, some people wallow and ruminate in their regrets, but you can interrupt that march toward rumination. If people know what to do, they say, treat yourself with kindness rather than contempt, disclose, convert to language to make sense of it, do some self-distancing to extract a lesson from it for next time. And if you do that, it becomes habitual. And then you get improvement. You get that initial jolt of pain from the regret, because regret hurts, it's negative, but you have a systematic way to turn that pain into something productive.
And one of the things you spoke about just now, you use the term illism. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I-L-L-E-I-S-M, where you talk about yourself in the third person.
Yes.
Can you just expand on that? There's one particular community in India, in Kerala, in South India, which does that in the language as a default. That's sort of the nature of the language when
they don't have a first. There is a first. So first person is an exception, and so third person is the default.
For example, if we were sitting in the room, I wouldn't say, "Would you want some coffee?" I'd say, "Would Dan want some coffee?" when I talk to you.
Oh, okay. So it's not. Well, how would you refer to yourself in that language?
It's a good question. I've seen that in the context of the second person. Probably not in the case of the first person. So yeah, I stand corrected.
Okay, but that's still it's still very interesting because it shows you. So, but it shows you like how we like our language. Well, this is a controversial point, but that change in language can produce a change in perspective. That's the thing about the third person. But the thing is, if you ask me that question. If you and I are in, I've been to Kerala, I've been to Cochin. Mm-hmm. Kerala is famous for its vindaloo. I know that.
Yes, and so, among many things, yeah.
Yeah, among other things. So religiously diverse state in India as well. Very yes. beautiful too. But I think that when you, like, if I were to respond to that saying, yes, Dan would like some tea, that's very interesting. I mean that's super interesting, and again it goes to so much of this goes to how we construe problems, and we want to construe problems both. We want to have the ability. It's almost bilingualism. We want to have the ability to construe problems on both the abstract level and the concrete level, both in the micro and the macro. And sometimes linguistic shifts can move us there, but we need to actually, since we don't do that automatically, we need to come up with ways to do that. That's why what would Marvin do is such a brilliant technique. What would my successor do? What would I tell my best friend to do? It's so powerful.
Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com.